The Punt Podcast, in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
Busy.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One in 17-10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
He's up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. Their odds against.
Love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes. Listen on Audio Boom or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Hello, everyone. A very warm welcome along to the latest edition of The Punt Podcast here with William Hill ahead of another Premier League weekend. We'll speak about the Football League as well, with Pete Farries, Gav Puchlowski and Al Ross giving their best bets in the Championship and Leagues 1 and 2. And this week's guest, the FWA guest, is the Daily Mirror's football writer Darren Lewis, who's going to reflect with us on the two friendlies England have just played. We'll talk about VAR as well, and we'll discuss who's going to win the World Cup. So that's all to come on the podcast. But first, as always, we are going to get stuck into the televised games in the Premier League. My name is Dave Kellner, and I am in the company of Derek McGovern and Andy Excel, both of whom are on the line this morning. First of all, a warm welcome to you, Mr. McGovern. How are you doing, sir?
Very well. Just so sad that the international week is over again. We have to wait so long for the next one. Just woe is me.
Don't you worry, Derek. We'll talk more about international football later on in this podcast. So you will be
Goodie. You'll
be satisfied with that, Derek. And Andy Excel joins us as well on the line. Andy, commiserations on the Senegal nap last weekend.
This is getting terrible now, isn't it? You have to delve that deep and you still can't find one.
And you're live from Halfords car park this morning.
Yeah, a bit of car maintenance going on. Life's glamorous.
Andy, just to have one afternoon or one morning in your shoes, that's all I ask. Let's get stuck into this weekend then, and we'll start with Crystal Palace versus Liverpool, which is the early kickoff on Saturday afternoon, 12:30 this one. Palace are 5-1 to win this game, the draw 100-30 with Liverpool in the betting at 1-2. The enhancements, Christian Benteke to score and Palace to win, that was 10-1, that's been enhanced to 12-1. And Mohamed Salah to score and Liverpool to win was even money. That's been boosted to 11-10. This will be, Derek, Jurgen Klopp's 100th Premier League game as a manager. His 99 games so far have seen 322 goals. They've scored 206, conceded 116, and only Manuel Pellegrini's first 100 games in the competition saw more goals. Has this been a success, Derek? Jurgen Klopp reaching the big 100 this weekend. Has he been a success in this job so far?
That's a very good question. Ask every other Liverpool fan and they will say unequivocally yes. I still have my doubts about him. But when you compared to the manager in the opposite dugout this weekend, Roy Hodgson, when he was at Liverpool, I mean, under Jurgen Klopp, Liverpool are full of menace and full of pace. Under Roy Hodgson, they were Fulham. That's how bad they were. He was awful. When you watch Liverpool now, you know that you're going to be treated to, you know, a great game, yet more often than not. And I would happily accept that, even if they don't win silverware. Seriously, I would. When I pay a lot of money to watch a game, when I don't get a freebie, I want to be entertained, and Liverpool entertained now under Klopp. Hodgson, though, the Palace manager, Jesus. He wears a permanent look of a man who can't remember where he's put his Weber's originals. Would Palace? You look at Palace, Dave, and you look at the players they've got: Kabay, Benteke, Zaha, Townsend. Would Palace be in any worse than they are now if I was manager? I honestly don't think so. And which, by coincidence, is the very response Hodgson gives when asked by his players, "Can we attack today, boss?" I don't think so. It's just, he's an awful manager, way past his sell-by date, if indeed he ever had one. And in the Premier League alone this season, he's presided over 12 losses, 13 if you count the dressing room. How bad are Palace? Well, they're a point behind Huddersfield there's all the clue you need. All that said, I saw stats today that Liverpool are the second worst performing team after international breaks in the Premier League.
That's interesting.
Yeah, 31% decline in points earned in matches that follow on from international breaks. That's over the last five seasons. That makes them the second worst team in the Premier League in that respect. So, you know, there's the scope there. And then when you look what's coming ahead for Liverpool, Champions League matches against Manchester City next week and the week after, and sandwiched in between those, the small matters of the Merseyside derby. So if you're going to oppose Liverpool, I would suggest this is the weekend to do it, even though, you know, you've got a clown of a manager in the opposite dugout. And then you see Palace at 5-1, a Palace side who are battling for points. You know, I've got a feeling about this game. It's like, you know that game when Liverpool played Swansea and probably the worst performance we've seen from them in a long time and they lost 1-0? That's in Liverpool. And I'm prepared to have a gander at 5-1. We'll get another performance like that from them. I think too big, Palace 5-1.
You're the only man, Derek, that could lambast a manager in a three-minute diatribe and then tip them to win the game. Derek, I appreciate that.
He's not playing, though, is he? He's not playing, Roy.
He's not. 5-1 Palace to win the match. Andy, how do you view this?
Well, first of all, Derek going on about getting a freebie, I thought pensioners got everything for free. But, yeah, similarly to your stats you should come out with, in the last five meetings at Crystal Palace between these two teams, there's been 22 goals, which is roughly 4.5 a game. So I'd be looking at both teams to score to start with, or around 8-11. That looks all right to me. I take Derek's point. By the way, I was at the Middlesbrough Training Academy, which is where my gym is, the other day, talking to Rudy Gusted about how good Mohamed Salah is.
Well, yeah. Oh, Rudy Gusted. Oh, dear me. I'll have to bow down. Sorry, giants and football like that. I must be wrong. And what were you doing in the gym? Your favourite machine is the vending machine there, isn't it? I've heard your favourite musical instrument is the dinner bell. What are you doing in the gym?
I'm prolific in the gym.
Oh, well, dear me.
So, anyway, moving on.
If you're going to name drop on this podcast, you've got to come up with something better than Rudy Gusted.
I'll try and get future. Tony Pulis next week then.
Go on, Andy.
So, yeah, I take all the points that Derek's made. It is a trap game. It is a tricky one. But I still think Liverpool will probably edge it. So another one you can have there, tying in with both teams to score, is Liverpool to win and both teams to score at 2-1. That's probably not the worst you've ever seen. And I think Liverpool might edge a high scorer here.
OK, Liverpool to win and both teams to score in that match. Let's move on to Everton versus Manchester City at Goodison. This is 5:30 on Saturday evening. Everton 15-2 to win this game. The draw 19-5. Manchester City 1-3. Everton to score in the first half was 12-5. That's been enhanced to 3-1. Cenk Tosun to score and Everton to win was 12-1. That's been enhanced to 14s, and Kevin De Bruyne to score in this match and Manchester City to win was 11-5. That's been enhanced to 5-2. Don't forget, Bet Boost available on all these Premier League matches as well. You've got a Bet Boost in each Premier League game if you wish to use one this weekend, listeners. Everton have won back-to-back games now, Andy. They beat Brighton 2-0, followed that with a 2-1 win away from home against Stoke City. And they are now ninth in the league, which is incredible. City, on the other hand, are 16 points clear going into this weekend. And David Silva got a brace in their most recent win away from home against Stoke. And worryingly for Everton fans, the City, or some of the City players, will come into this fresh as well. They've not played domestically, City, in 19 days, Andy. 1-3 to win this game, Manchester City.
Yeah, I mean, contradictory feelings about this game, but I'm not going to go down Derek's route of slagging one off and then putting them up. yeah, I mean, you've got a fancy City. I don't think we've realised just how good they are yet, but there is a chance that they're taking their eye off the ball here with the Champions League coming up and being so far. I just don't see it. I see them winning. I see them winning to nil. Having said that, the other stat, which is contradictory, is one that you've just read out, that they've won their last two. And then in the last seven meetings between these games, it's two wins apiece and three draws. So even in recent history, Everton have a decent record against them, but I've still got to go with City and probably to win to nil, which is 6-5.
Actually, just drifted slightly, 5-4 now, City to win this game to nil, which is even better for you. Andy's made a good point about the meetings between the two sides, but this is a very different City side than Everton have seen in recent times, Derek.
Yeah, it is. Much better City side, probably a much worse Everton side. You mentioned that City might take their eye off the ball because of what's coming up next week, the Liverpool game, and they're so far clear, Derek, they can afford to take their eye off the ball, but I suppose... the same applies to Everton. You know, they've climbed under Sam Allardyce. He stayed Everton from relegation heartland to ninth spot, which until about a week ago was relegation heartland. They're on 40 points, so they're safe. So they could just as easily take their eye off the ball, even at home. I find this a tough one to call. You know, you just can't see City taking it easy, can you? They look too professional, too proud of themselves. I just don't see it happening. I just can't bring myself to back Everton to beat a decent side with Sam Allardyce as manager. The people who are still gutted that Allardyce is not still England manager, but unfortunately most of them are Everton fans because he hasn't gone down well with Blue Noses. This is a battle between two of the finest tactical brains in the Premier League, isn't it, really? Pep Guardiola and Sam Allardyce. Well, that's according to a survey of Sam Allardyce. Anyway, I've got to go for City here, even at 1-3. I think they are just too... I think the way they are polishing sides off now, I just can't see them taking their eye off the ball. I think they'll see the season out. And it's not as if... You know, it's not as if they've got a tough fixture running between now and the end of the season, is it really? It's got to be City to win 2-0 as well. I can't see Everton scoring past them 6-5 or 5-4, I think you said.
Yeah, 5-4 on that. And I think Pep Guardiola will have revenge on his mind here as well. I think it's well worth noting that Everton won in this fixture 4-0 last season. That was Guardiola's heaviest ever league defeat as a manager. And he'll remember that, Guardiola, going into this weekend. 1-3, City to win the game.
Alex Stone is on gardening leave after managing to get one of the best 1-3 shots he's ever seen beaten last weekend. I'll take a stab in Germany this week for the European nap with a side who have impressed many this season, and that is Schalke. After a testing season last year which saw them finish well off the European pace, a Champions League spot looks very possible this term, and they're currently sitting pretty in second place and welcome Freiburg to the Veltins Arena this week. The bottom two look cut adrift in the Bundesliga, and Freiburg will be hoping that a 5-point cushion is enough to prevent them from dropping into the relegation playoff zone, and in all honesty, those 5 points probably are enough. A few more points this season should see them survive, but they face a mammoth task of getting anything this week against the banging form Schalke side. 5 straight wins and 4 clean sheets coming into this one against a Freiburg side with just 1 away win all season, and even that came against Köln, who looked doomed. I make Schalke a good bet this weekend. They're 1-2 outright, and I think they'll win. The 5-4 appeals for them to win to nil given their recent run of clean sheets, but I'm going to be a bit bolder and go for Schalke minus a goal at 6-4. They beat Leverkusen 2-0 away from home recently, so on home soil against inferior opposition, they should be capable of scoring a few. Schalke -1, the nap this week.
Arsenal versus Stoke is next up. This is a 1:30 kickoff on Sunday. 100-30 on Arsenal in the betting. The draw 9-2. Stoke in the betting at 9-1. Mesut Ozil to score and Arsenal to win was 8-5. That's been enhanced to 9-5. And Jerdan Shaqiri to score and Stoke City to win was 14-1. That's been enhanced to 16-1. I think the last maybe month has been a microcosm of Arsene Wenger's last 5 or 6 years in charge of Arsenal. I firmly believe, Derek, he's trolling the fans now. You look at how they performed, hammered by City in the League Cup final, then in the league shortly after that, and then they come back and beat Milan 5-1 on aggregate over 2 legs in the Europa League, beat Watford 3-0 in the league in between those 2 performances as well. It's as if Arsene Wenger thinks, I wonder how far I can push the envelope without losing my job. And he just gets to the brink, the edge of the cliff, and then pulls them back.
Yeah, he's done it a number of times, hasn't he? But I didn't quite realise how bad Arsenal's plight was. I've just had a fresh look at the league table because I haven't seen it for a while because there hasn't been any Premier League games for ages, it seems. And 48 points after 30 games, 11 points off 4th spot. That's that. I mean, that's damning indictment of Wenger, isn't it? Out of the FA Cup, probably won't. You know, we've got a chance of winning the Europa League, but I can't see it. I don't think they're good enough. Actually, it's been a shocker of a season, and in a way, I don't think he's getting anywhere near the flack he deserves. You know, because this is the kind of season that's been coming for a million, you know, for about 10 years now for Arsenal. But they're playing Stoke, and a few years ago you'd have thought, well, Stoke, one of those sides that always give Arsenal problems. But the last four home matches against Stoke, Arsenal have won all four of them, and an aggregate scoreline of 11-2. And then you look at their league, you look at Arsenal in the league, and their home form is tremendous. 11 wins out of, and two draws from 15 matches. It's away from home where you oppose them. At the Emirates, you don't seem to make too many mistakes. Stoke are awful. You were awful under the past manager. They're awful under this one. Second from bottom. You've got to go for it. I hate backing Arsenal at short prices, but I have to go for them. And I think I'll go for them without conceding because I just can't see Stoke scoring.
Arsenal to win the game to nil is 13-10 here with William Hill. Arsenal have won their last 15 home games against Stoke in all competitions. That run stretches back to 1981, this stat from Opta. That's when Stoke won 1-0 at Highbury thanks to a goal by Lee Chapman. So you've got to go back a long time for Stoke's last success away from home against Arsenal. Andy, are you expecting a comprehensive, convincing Arsenal performance this weekend?
Yeah, you've just read out the stat about the last 15. Actually, against Stoke, they've got an opposing record home and away. At home, they take care of them, and they will again. Stoke have never been worse than they are now. I think some of the players are already thinking, I'm going to move on, or I'm actually quite happy to drop down. Because they're getting a bit old in the tooth and they fancy playing Championship football rather than getting them roasting at Premier League. So I think Arsenal win 10 of the last 13. Arsenal have won against Stoke by more than one. So that's 5-6. That don't seem terrible to me either. I think they'll win quite comfortably.
OK, Arsenal to batter Stoke on Sunday. And the last televised game this weekend is Chelsea versus Spurs in a London derby. This is at Stamford Bridge. Big game of the weekend as well. Chelsea are 13-10 to win it. The draw 11-5. Tottenham are 21-10. Loads of enhancements on this game. Bet Boost available as well here with William Hill. I'll read a couple of them out. Eden Hazard to score and Chelsea to win was 13-5. That's been enhanced to 3-1. And Heung-min Son to score in a Spurs win was 4-1. That's been boosted to 5-1. Chelsea must win this game if they've got any chance of finishing in the top four. They're currently 5 points behind Spurs in the league. And incredibly, they are unbeaten, Chelsea, in their last 27 home league matches against Spurs. They've won 18 of those and drawn 9. Last tasted defeat against Spurs in the league back in February 1990 when they lost 2-1. And Chelsea beat them 2-1 at Wembley in the reverse fixture as well. And Spurs without Harry Kane this weekend. And when Kane's been missing, under Mauricio Pochettino, Spurs have won 59% of their games in which Kane's featured, compared to just 39% when he's not played a part. Admittedly, a small sample size. They've only played 13 without him under Pochettino. They've won just 5 of those. But it is a factor going into this weekend's match, Andy.
Oh, definitely. Then, you know, Christian Eriksen's as big a miss as Kane for me. Without one of them, that weakens them hugely. And this is actually the biggest derby for a lot of these fans in both teams. A lot talked about Tottenham-Arsenal, but the King's Road derby, as they tend to call it, Chelsea against Spurs, they pick each other. And Chelsea always get up for this one. And that's been the problem for them all year, is getting up for Premier League. So I think they'll be all right. And I quite like the price at around 13-10. I think that's all right.
13-10 Chelsea to win the game. From a bookmaking perspective, Andy, do you expect to field plenty of cash for Chelsea, or do you think Spurs will be popular in the lead up to the match?
You know, it'll be interesting to see which way it goes. I think we've pitched it about right at the moment, but I think we'll have a bigger position on Tottenham because of the price. We'll probably lay both equally, but because of the price, we'll have a bigger position on Tottenham. So we're probably cheering Chelsea on.
Okay. Derek, your thoughts?
Well, I wouldn't be backing Tottenham. A, they haven't got Harry Kane, and B, they don't have to win this. This is a battle for fourth spot, arguably to third if you're Tottenham. They've got a healthy gap over Chelsea at the moment. But they've got some tough fixtures to play, Spurs. They've still got to play Chelsea, obviously, Manchester City and Man United in the running. So, you know, the points are going to be hard to pick up in those games. They'll be desperate not to lose this, because if they lose this to Chelsea, it's bang on. The Blues are back in it again in the top four place. If Tottenham get a point here, they'll be absolutely chuffed. Keeps Chelsea at arm's length, almost guarantees them, I would suggest, a top four spot. So I don't see Tottenham going out trying to win this one. I know they're good going forward, but you know they're not bad at the back either. I think this will be a very tight game. I noticed there have been over 2.5 goals scored in six of Chelsea's last seven games, and I look at the price for that evens. I see this being tight, though. I really do. Spurs have lost at Man United. They've lost at Arsenal. They've lost at Man City. They should have lost at Liverpool. Away from home, they're not doing it in the big games, so there's a further reason not to back them. I can understand why Andy is going for Chelsea at 13-10 here. But I've got more. I think a draw at a bigger price, a much bigger price, is the likelier bet.
11-5, the draw in the match. Now, chaps, it's time for the naps. This season, I've kept meticulous detail about the naps. Every time I look at that computer now, that Excel spreadsheet, I want to be taken into the abyss. I want to burn that computer down, because that's how bad the naps have been this season from us. So we need to make a late surge at the business end of the Premier League season. So no pressure for you, Derek.
I'm going. The 3 o'clock game's on Saturday. Dear me. I mean, you could give me 11 goals in each of those games. I wouldn't be confident of picking a winner. I'm going to go for the big price one here because I need one. And I honestly do think Palace are massively overpriced at 5-1 to beat Liverpool.
Okay.
So that's my bet.
Palace at 5-1 for Derek. Andy?
Burnley, 19-10 against a team who couldn't win a raffle.
That's Burnley to beat West Brom at 19-10. I'm going to go for a big Arsenal win this weekend. So on the handicap, I'm taking Arsenal -2 at 19-10 as my selection. Just under 50-1 that treble. Crystal Palace at 5-1. Burnley at 19-10, and Arsenal -2 at 19-10. Good luck.
Now at William Hill, you can get your bet onto the website for featured matches. If there's a bet you fancy that's not on the app, just tweet with the hashtag #YourOdds to @WilliamHill, and the traders will try to price it up. Hashtag #YourOdds from William Hill.
Now, joining us on the podcast, myself and Derek, is the Daily Mirror's football writer Darren Lewis to reflect on England's performances in those two friendlies. And we'll go through who's going to win the World Cup, if you can make a prediction at this stage. So a warm welcome, a good morning to you, Darren. How are you, Darren?
Good morning. I'm very well. Looking forward to the Premier League coming back.
I think you speak for everyone when you say that, Darren. I think we're all looking forward to the Premier League coming back.
Especially Gareth Southgate.
You know what? I think Darren, as well, Gareth Southgate has made a grave mistake in these two friendlies, because he's given fans of the national team hope now and a bit of optimism. I think going into these two games against the Netherlands and Italy, I speak for the majority of supporters when I say we were happy wallowing in the blissful knowledge that we were going to have very little expectation going into this World Cup. But now I think fans are starting to believe, Darren, which is disconcerting.
Well, it's very funny, but it is very true that what we've got out of the two friendlies is what you would want out of friendlies, which are signs that the team, the squad, is going in the right direction, that they've got a semblance of an identity, that we can score goals, that we do have depth within the squad. And yes, from that point of view, it did look encouraging, but yes, it does raise optimism ahead of the World Cup as well. I think I would prefer to be positive and say that it's a good thing that Gareth Southgate has made some very big calls, leaving out the so-called established players, the Smallings, the Joneses of this world, and lots of eyebrows raised last autumn when he named that squad with so many young players ahead of the match against Germany and Brazil. But now you look at the squad, you look at the options available to him, it does look as though it's taking shape quite nicely.
Which players, Darren, do you think really excelled in those two friendlies?
I thought Sterling was outstanding on Tuesday night. I thought that, and last week as well. I think that, as far as he's concerned, you can see the impact that working with Pep Guardiola has had, not only on his game, but on his confidence as well. He asked for lots of people to show England players the love, and he led from the front with a really exhilarating performance against the Italians, showed the willingness to run at their defence at every opportunity. They tried to hack him down. He kept getting back up. It was his run that won the free kick from which Jamie Vardy scored that goal that really should have won the game. I know people may argue about VAR. We'll talk about it later. But I think as far as England are concerned, Sterling was impressive. Vardy is proving yet again, people might deride him because he's come from non-league, but he's showing that he absolutely deserves to be playing at this level. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, nowhere near the England squad before he went to Liverpool. Now you can't pick an England squad without him, in my opinion. Showed a good passing range, showed a willingness to run at defenders as well. Jesse Lingard, very much underrated for club and country, in my opinion. But I think he now, you would pick an England team, and certainly Southgate did on Tuesday night with him in, ahead of Dele Alli. And that's going to be a big talking point going forward. I would imagine Pochettino at Spurs will defend him. I'm going to go to their press conference very soon. And also Ashley Young. I think his versatility very important, as well as his ability to defend. Remember, he kept Mo Salah quiet when Man United played Liverpool. One of the few defenders, he's not a defender, but we'll describe him as a defender, so to do this season. What's quite interesting about that squad is that I have been able to pick so many players who have given us a few reasons to be cheerful. And I think I'm one of the... Listen, I know there are people within my industry who would possibly be a little bit more downbeat, but I prefer to be positive about the future going forward, because I've always believed, you know, that we have had the players. We've been unfortunate with, in some occasions, with the managers, with the people that have been trying to fuse it all together. But I think we've got somebody who will prove to be the right man in Gareth Southgate. And I think we've definitely got a good squad at the moment.
What were your views on those two friendlies, Derek? Impressed?
Oh, no, you pay no. It's everything's going exactly the same way. Every 4 years we get the same thing. A couple of decent performances in friendlies in March. Optimism rises until, you know, a key player breaks his metatarsal sometime in April. Darren mentions we've got, you know, the squad has depth now. Well, it does. It has a weakness in depth. I'm sorry, I just can't. Dennis says we've had our teams in the past and we haven't won the World Cup. Well, we did. We had good teams then. This is the worst England team I can imagine. And if you mentioned the players who played well. Sterling, he performed well over the last week, particularly against the dollar. Jesse Lingard also did. But I'll tell you, we're disappointed in those matches against Holland and Italy. Holland and Italy. I mean, they were joke opposition, and Italy could even have won. You pay no heed to performances in friendlies. We've made that mistake. Punters have made that mistake all the time. Friendly international matches are three words that chill the blood more than replacement bus service. Time, gentlemen, please. And Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. I'm sorry, I can't have him as either.
You see, I wouldn't, despite all I've said, back England to win the World Cup. But I would say that there are signs and reasons to be optimistic. And you mentioned that the opposition were poor, but Holland went to Portugal and won 3-0 in their subsequent game. Italy, yeah, they're on the floor, their confidence is low, but you look within that Italy side, there are a number of very good players within there. And what we are experts at doing in this country, with good reason, because they've let us down so often over the years, over the decades, is talk England down. And so I've got no reason really to contend with what you're saying, Del, but I just think I prefer as an individual to look at what I'm seeing there, and there are players that can run at defenders. It's not sideways and backwards anymore. Okay, friendlies, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't, because if England went out and scored 5 goals, we'd still be saying the opposition was terrible. England score 1 goal, they show a few signs of maybe rediscovering their confidence, they still get hammered. If they lose, we'll hammer them even more. They can't really win, so all we could hope for is what we saw the other night.
Derek, we've got to talk about the video assistant referee as well, because that's heavily in the news. I think those three words, video assistant referee, are the most feared three words in football after Derek McGovern's nap now.
Hey, no, Dad.
Listen, I can vouch for Dell. Don't worry about that.
No, Derek, right. What did you make to that that decision? Or what do you make? We've spoken about this numerous times on the podcast. But was the correct decision in the end made on Tuesday night?
No, I don't think it was. To be honest, I really don't. And it should never have been referred to VAR anyway. For all the reasons we've heard on the TV recently. I mean, I've always thought there's always something that ruins a World Cup. In 2010, it was the Jabulani ball. In 2002, it was the weird kick-off time. Every other year, it was England. Well, VAR will make this one unwatchable. I've said before, Dave, I'd rather have what we used to have at Old Trafford, FAR, Fergie assisted referee. That's how bad VAR is. Once it's perfected, and it will get better because it has to, it's a joke at the moment, we'll have football matches in which every decision is 100% correct. But the problem, as I've said before, is by then, no one will be watching. It is an absolute travesty of an introduction. And whoever, I mean, I keep reading that it's working in other countries. I can't see how. It's a joke. And there's absolutely no way it will come into the Premier League in the next 5 seasons because it's ruining football.
Darren, I actually I agree with Derek here. I think half the fun of... watching football and discussing football afterwards with friends in pubs, etc., is that some decisions are made incorrectly and some decisions aren't, that they are subjective. So we have different people thinking different things, and that's the beauty of the game, isn't it?
See, the problem is that in our digital generation, basically driven by millennials, we're seen as Luddites for having a view like that. But I agree with the two of you. I absolutely agree with Derek. We will get a stage where decisions are 100% correct, but everyone will have switched off because it is spoiling the matchday experience. I've watched now and covered for the Daily Mirror a number of games in which VAR has been involved, and in every occasion they've spoilt the experience. I've come away with more people talking about the decision than fewer people. And wasn't that supposed to be the case? The whole point of technology, that we would bring it in and after witnessing or after seeing it at work, we'd come away thinking, that's fantastic, that VAR. No, it's not been the case at all. Danny Rose, when Spurs played Rochdale, called it a disgrace because you had players standing around in sub-zero temperatures while they were taking up to two and a half minutes trying to work decisions out. It's just a joke, and I agree. You may well get, as you did on Tuesday night, Tarkovsky stood on the feet of Chiesa, and everyone said afterwards, well, wasn't it brought in to get to the right decision? Yes, but in the wrong way. And football has never, ever been an exact science. And the idea that you're a Philistine for kind of saying, you know, the whole point is that the game you fell in love with playing with two jumpers for goalposts should be, you know, suddenly it should be decided by a man in a room with a TV screen. Not for me, I'm sorry.
Okay, let's talk about the World Cup 2018, the betting here with William Hill. Neither of you two are tempted by England at 16-1. Germany are 9-2 favourites, France 5-1, Brazil 5-1, Spain are 6-1, Belgium 10-1, Argentina 11-1, 16-1 England and 25-1, and bigger the rest. Derek, it's wide open according to the betting.
Yeah, it is. The Argentina results in midweek really made you shake your head, didn't it? On Lionel Messi wasn't playing, Aguero neither, but to lose 6-1 in Spain, that was an absolute shocker. And you know, I think they'll be left off a lot of people's shortlist of potential winners because of that. I mean, Messi might come in and he changes the dynamic, of course he does. But they've been to the World Cup with Messi in the past and done nothing, so you know, why should it be different this time around? I wrote Spain off late last season, but well, one of many teams have made chumps of me. They've been sensational since then. So I would suggest, it's in Europe, so it's going to be won by a European team. I don't see anything better than Spain at the moment.
Spain at 6-1 for Derek at this stage as we gear up for the World Cup in Russia. Darren, France impressed midweek as well. Paul Pogba, with the shackles off, performed, and Kylian Mbappe looks good again. And they're in the betting second favourites at 5-1 France. It was interesting away from England to look at how these teams are performing in the lead up to the major tournament.
Yeah, it was interesting. They blew a 2-0 lead against Colombia,
in their first match, but bounced back by beating Russia in St. Petersburg the other night. Paul Pogba scoring one of the goals. And they do look good. They do look to have a good, strong squad. The difference between them and Spain is that Spain have, Spain have done it before superbly. And, Spain look to have trained on Julen Lopetegui in charge, unbeaten in 18 since he took over after they went out at Euro 2016. They scored with all six of their shots on target as well against Argentina. France, they flattered to deceive sometimes. They have only won one. Obviously, they won the World Cup in 98. But you don't really know which France will turn up from one game to the next for me. And that's my big worry about them. I would obviously look to Germany. I can't believe it's that wide open when Germany have got such a strong track record in the competition. If they win another one, they equal Brazil's five, if I'm not mistaken. And they cruise through qualifying, 10 wins out of 10. Okay, Manuel Neuer, I think he's got a broken metatarsal, but Ter Stegen could come in for him. They've just got so much strength and depth in that squad. And even up front, where some people have suggested they've been a bit weak in recent years, they've got Timo Werner, who scored 7 in his 12 caps. So I would possibly go for Germany, but I wouldn't write off Brazil. I know it's in Europe, but so many of their players play in Europe, and they just look awesome under Chiche at the moment too.
Hello, my name's Pete Farries, and looking at the Championship, nothing says a wonderful Easter weekend like betting in the Championship, and for me, Cardiff are a great price at 2-5. Of course, for you, they're a great price at 2-5 as well. I'm not exactly putting up a nap that many of you won't have already considered, but when you consider that Burton, away from home, having gone through a good spell earlier in the season, have now conceded 6 at Fulham, 3 at Wolverhampton Wanderers, 2 at Sheffield United, 3 at Villa, they're a side who, against the bigger teams in the league, are now very much struggling. And yes, Cardiff have only won by a goal in their last 4 home games, but they beat Borough, they beat Bristol City, and admittedly we're a tad fortunate to beat Birmingham, albeit that -1 that I put up was landing until the very last seconds. So I'm going to go again with the -1 here for Cardiff. It's 11-10 for Neil Warnock's men to do this by more than one goal. And with Burton as poor as they are on the road, and sadly as poor as they are generally, I see no chance of them getting anything, and probably not even a goal at Cardiff either. So easy for me this week, all the very best, but Cardiff, -1, my nap of the week. Let's hear from Gav Pachalowski and his thoughts on League One.
So I'm doing my best, my very best, on Good Friday to stay clear of Plymouth Argyle, because I've played them for the last few weeks. Yes, they let me down last weekend, but I cannot find a better price for the better side at home than Plymouth Argyle. So again, I've got to play them at 5-4 to beat Southend. The only other bet I was very tempted with was Bristol Rovers at home to Bury, but Bristol Rovers are odds on at 19-20. So it is Plymouth again this weekend. And look at the evidence again. Plymouth Argyle have won their last 4 games straight at home and scored 2, 4, 1 and 3, so they're scoring plenty. And Plymouth Argyle have actually won 10 of 11 at home. There's only Wigan have come here and won. Southend United away from home, not on a bad run. 3 consecutive draws, 0-0 at Bury, 0-0 at Rochdale, and drew 1-1 at Blackpool. But before that, Southend away from home had lost 8 in 11. And I think Southend are going to return to losing ways on their travels. Cannot ignore a side who have won 10 in 11 at home against a side who have failed to score in 2 or 3 away from home. So I'm all over Plymouth at 5-4 to beat Southend. That is my nap. Looking at League 2, here's Al Ross.
Out of the last possible 42 points, Liverpool have 32, Tottenham 33, Napoli 35, Man City 35, Barca 36, Bayern 37. Now, if you saw any of those teams on a run of 4 wins away from home odds against taking on a team in 7th who are winless in 5, would you play them? Of course you would. Welcome to this week's nap, 11-5 Accrington, who have 37 out of their last possible 42 points. They are at Mansfield, playoff contenders, yes, but their form under new boss David Flitcroft is 4 draws, 1 defeat. Why the traders think it's near evens at 6-5, that his first win in charge will come against Accrington at what is his 6th attempt, is beyond me. Mansfield, 4 points from those 5 games on the Flitcroft. Accrington, 3 points from the last one. 12 from the last four. If you want to go back further, Mansfield have 2 wins and 10 points since the start of February. Accrington, 8 wins and 25 points. It's not a huge distance. There will be a sizeable away support, I know, because Accrington have received extra tickets after selling out their away allocation. I don't know if you're a head-to-head backer. I'm not, but hey, worth noting that an FA Cup tie in 2006 is the last and only time that Mansfield have beaten Accrington. In the 12 meetings since, all in League 2, Accrington won 9, drawn 3, lost none. There is quite a bit of value elsewhere in League 2 heading into Easter, but none like this. They don't call it Good Friday for nothing. Accrington Stanley, 11-5.
That's it for the podcast, folks. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Don't forget, you can get a bet boost on each Premier League game this weekend, so check out all the betting at sports.williamhill.com and on the William Hill app as well. Special thanks goes to the Daily Mirror's football writer, Darren Lewis, for his contribution on the England friendlies and talking about VAR as well. Make sure you subscribe to get this podcast delivered weekly at audioboom.com by typing in the punt, available at the usual podcast places as well. And we will be back with more action on Monday, looking ahead to the Champions League and the Europa League. Thanks again for listening in, and we'll speak again in the not too distant future. If you're having a bet this weekend, good luck.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.